Good morning, everyone. Very big welcome to the LSC. My name's Dr. Matthew Hall, and I'm an associate professor in the Department of Accounting. What we're going to do this morning is to give you a taste for what you might be able to experience if you decide to come and join us at the LSC, which we, of course, very much hope you all decide to do that. So for about 20 minutes or so, I'm going to give you a snapshot of some of the material that we cover in one of our third year undergraduate courses. So this material I just taught a few months ago, and it gives you an idea of some of the topics, some of the style of teaching that we undertake at the LSC. Then we'll have time for some questions at the end. If anyone has any, I hope you do. We like to have participative lectures at the LSC, not just us talking all the time. And then we also have the president of our Accounting Student Society coming along towards the end as well to give you some information about that society and other information about accounting at LSE. So again, a very big welcome, very big congratulations on getting an offer, and I certainly hope to see a lot of you here come October. So what I'm going to talk to you about very briefly is accounting in non-governmental organisations, or NGOs. So this topic is part, as I said, of our third year undergraduate course. And a lot of our courses, they go for 20 weeks. So they're called four-year courses. And many times we split up those four-year courses into smaller blocks, about 5 weeks. So this is one example of those. So we teach accounting in NGOs for 5 weeks. Now, the way our teaching model works at LSE is we have the pretty sort of standard lectures and then what we call classes. So you might have a lecture very much like this, where you have all students in the course who sit and listen for a couple of hours normally, and then you'll be broken up into much smaller classes of about 10 to 15 students. So you typically have one of those a week. So that's how this class, this subject works as well. So I will take the lecture normally on a Friday morning, and then the following week I take all the classes as well. So a lot of our courses work like that too, where you have the lecture, basically lecturing to you and taking the classes as well. Okay, so talking about accounting in NGOs, this is really a very short version of the very first lecture that I give students on. So we cover just two things: what are NGOs, and then what might be complicated about accounting in NGOs. So we're going to start off with just a few examples. So we always like to try and use real-life examples, so you get a real feel for what is actually happening in practice. So now I'm just going to go through a couple of examples of some NGOs, some of them you might be familiar with, some of them. So the first one, Oxfam. Has anyone heard of Oxfam? Yeah, most people. Seems good. So Oxfam is a very large international development NGO, and it operates a wide variety of different programs. So from long-term development programs, where they work in countries on various projects for 10, 15 years or so. They also respond to humanitarian emergencies. So, for example, if there's a crisis somewhere, in Syria, for example, or in Haiti recently, then they will typically be involved in providing emergency assistance in those situations. And you might have seen in the newspapers or even on television, they are also involved in running campaigns on various issues as well. Where do they do this? Well, Oxfam, as I said, is quite large, very global, and so they operate in many different parts of the world, in fact, in most. And then NGOs can also operate in different ways or undertake different activities. And so Oxfam is actually more like a grant-making, what we call a grant-making NGO. So they often don't run programs themselves, but will partner with other NGOs or organisations in developing countries to run programs for them. So they tend to partner up with organizations in developing countries. They offer direct service provision in those emergencies. As I said, they also undertake campaigning for using press, social media, lobbying, governments, and so on. So Oxfam is really like a do-everything kind of NGO. If you think of what NGOs can do, Oxfam is one of those NGOs that tends to do it. In contrast, you might have heard of Amnesty. You might have heard of Amnesty? A very old, established NGO. In fact, their headquarters are just a few miles from here, in Angel. Amnesty really started as effectively a letter-writing organisation. So what they did is certain governments would hold people as political prisoners, and what Amnesty did would get lots and lots and lots of people to literally handwrite a letter to governments or whoever was keeping those people in prison. That's really how they began. Which is why in their logo there, you see the candle, which is like a signal of hope, but then it has barbed wire around it, signifying people being locked up. And Amnesty is also a movement, so you actually become a member of Amnesty. So unlike Oxfam, where you tend to donate money, if you're involved with Amnesty, you actually become a member and can vote on certain things that they do. Recently, they had over 3 million supporters. And as I said, that can involve letter writing, maybe not so much now. And I think Amnesty kind of spawned a lot of these organisations now that are involved in advocacy, getting people to support different issues. So both Oxfam and Amnesty are very international NGOs, operating kind of all over the world. And they're also what we would call Western NGOs. So they're originated and tend to get most of their money from Western places. In contrast, you can have a large NGO like BRAC, which actually operates originally in Bangladesh. So BRAC used to mean the Bangladesh Rural Advancement Committee. It's now since grown and established itself into a large organization. And so this is an example of a non-Western, or sometimes referred to as a Southern NGO, where the NGO actually began in a developing country context. As I said there, they founded in Bangladesh, and now they actually have expanded a little bit to operate in different countries in Africa and Asia as well. They do a few different things. Obviously, they provide services. They're also involved in microfinance. They help create village organisations to mobilise efforts within different communities. And finally, just one last example, coming a little bit closer to home, is a UK-based charity or NGO called Scope. You might have seen some of the shops on the high street. Same with Oxfam, you might have been to some of their charity shops on the high street as well. Now, Scope is what we call a single-issue NGO. But it just focuses on supporting people who have particular disabilities. So it's not like Oxfam doing a whole lot of different things. They're just focusing on people who have disabilities. And they don't do this internationally, unlike Oxfam and Amnesty, which are just focused on helping people in the UK. And they tend to do this in two ways. One, they provide services, housing, employment, training, and so on. And they also run campaigns about promoting the rights of people who have disabilities. That just gives you a very, very small introduction to what NGOs are and some examples of specific types of NGOs. Does anyone know of any other NGOs? To offer a suggestion?
This is exactly what I do in the class, so it gives you a good feel for what you might experience. And I always say to the students, it's always a little bit daunting to offer a suggestion in front of people, particularly for you guys, actually, because you don't know each other. But that being said, I'm not going to buy it, and I'm sure no one else will. So does anyone know of any other NGOs? Yeah?
Greenpeace.
What does Greenpeace do? Yeah, they're mainly involved in environmental campaigns. Very good. Any other examples? Yeah? Cancer Research UK. They're very locally. They're literally just around the corner, Cancer Research UK. So obviously, what do they do? Yeah, they research cancer, try to find a cure for cancer, fund cancer research, campaign for cancer-related issues. Any other examples? Maybe one more? I'll try and get someone else, yeah?
Fair trade?
Yeah, what do they do? Yeah, try to get decent wages, decent prices for goods. I mean, everyone's probably seen this in the supermarket, with particular things like bananas, coffee, a lot of these sort of big commodities that are typically grown in developing countries. Excellent. Now, just very briefly, we can think about why might accounting be different or more complicated in NGOs. And remember, as I said, this subject is part of a third year course. And so up until this point, students have learnt about accounting mainly, if not exclusively, from a business or a private sector perspective. So what we try and do in this 5 weeks is think about, well, given what we would already know about how accounting works in the private sector, what might be more complicated or different. So we try and focus on five reasons or five factors that might make accounting more complicated in the NGO sector. The first one of those, perhaps rather obviously, that NGOs do not generate profits, or their aim is to not generate profits. They're focused on a variety of social goals. Now, that could be poverty reduction, campaigning for disability rights, environmental campaigns, fighting diseases like cancer, all the examples that we just talked about. But what makes that difficult is that for a business, we do have a bottom line. Most businesses are trying to generate a profit, and we actually have ways of measuring what that profit is. In fact, study accounting at LSE, you'll learn how to calculate profit, obviously, and how to prepare reports that show how much profit a company has generated. But for an NGO, there's no such thing. We don't actually try and calculate profit at all. That doesn't actually mean anything in the context of an organisation whose aim is to not generate a profit. So if we're not going to measure profit as our overall sort of summary measure of performance, then what will we measure? So there's a real question for NGOs as to what do you actually measure? What kinds of things, what kinds of metrics would you actually produce to try and evaluate the performance of the organisation? Because that's one of the main roles of accounting, is to provide measurements that allow us to assess how well an organisation is performing. So this is much more challenging because we don't have that single bottom line. That's very difficult to assess the overall performance of NGOs. We tend to get sort of piecemeal metrics, maybe how much funding the NGO received, maybe how many people it helped. We tend to use these kinds of metrics, but they're not particularly helpful, or not as helpful as having a measure like profit. And because there's a lot of diversity in measurement, it's very difficult to compare the performance of different NGOs. So for example, if you were thinking of investing money in the share market, for example, it's very easy to go and look up the profitability of different companies and simply do a comparison. That would not take much effort at all. But doing something like that for NGOs, imagine you're going to invest some money or donate some money to an NGO.
actually trying to compare which NGOs are more effective than others is actually very difficult. It's certainly much more difficult than what it is for the private sector. And related to that is that NGOs are also not trying to improve themselves. They're trying to help or impact people who are effectively outside the organisation. So, for example, if I'm a company, my aim is to generate profits for the company. In contrast, if I'm an NGO, I'm not really trying to improve the NGO itself. I'm actually trying to help people who might have cancer, for example, or to help people who are living in poverty in a particular country, or to help people who maybe are not getting sufficient services for their needs. So the people that the NGOs are trying to help, and what we should be focusing on in measuring effectiveness, are effectively outside the organisation. So this has two implications. One, when we're thinking about measuring the performance of the NGO, we really need to, at least in some way, look at how the NGO is impacting those people. If you think about it, that's going to be very difficult because, for example, if we're helping people who have cancer, those people don't work for the NGO. And so if we want to know how we're impacting them, we're going to have to go out into the world, effectively, and somehow be able to measure what effect we're having on those people. It's much more difficult than just measuring profit, for example. Related to that is the fact that, using our Cancer UK example again, imagine we measured the incidence of cancer in the population, and we saw that had declined. And so Cancer UK might be using that as a measure of their performance. They might say, well, we spent all this money on research, we've given all these grants, we've done all this campaigning, and now we see that cancer rates have fallen. If that was in the context of a profit-making organisation, so say you're Apple and you make $1 billion in profit, that profit is yours, and no one really questions whether that profit should be someone else's. That's their profit. But it's a bit different in the case of reduced cancer rates, because there might be many things that influence the incidence of cancer in the UK, for example. And we have to ask the question, if the cancer rate goes down, how much of that can we actually attribute to the work of Cancer UK, or how much of that is just to do with something else? Either some random factors, or maybe the work of other NGOs. Cancer UK is not the only NGO working. Maybe it was to do with government policies. Maybe it was to do with something completely different. So we have this issue of attribution, or how much contribution did the NGO actually make to those changes in measurement. So this is a real complication that you don't get when you're looking at effectiveness measures from the private sector. NGOs also tend to have quite a broad and diverse range of stakeholders. So if you're the government, ultimately, you have lots of stakeholders, but ultimately you're really worried about taxpayers and voters. Because in the end, they're the people that you're accountable to. Particularly voters, they're the ones that can throw you out of office, for at least a little while. If you're running a business, you're primarily accountable to the owners, the people who have contributed capital to the organisation. But for NGOs, it's a little bit mixed, a little bit different. You're not just accountable to people who donate money, because you're also very accountable to the people that you're actually trying to assist. So again, if you're Cancer UK, you're in some ways accountable to people who have cancer or might be susceptible to getting cancer, because they're your identified group who you're actually trying to help. So even at the very basic level, you have a bit more complicated accountability because you already have both people giving money and also those you're trying to help. And then you have a whole vast array of other stakeholders, such as the staff. A lot of NGOs have volunteers who work for free. Maybe you feel like Oxfam and you're operating in lots of different countries. You have some sense of accountability to governments in those particular countries. If, say, you're an NGO working in the UK and you actually get money from the UK government, you're in effect somehow accountable to them. Maybe you're working with other NGOs in partnerships, you have some accountability to them, and so on and so on. So lots of different stakeholders. And that sort of ends up having two main effects for accounting. NGOs tend to produce lots and lots and lots of different reports. If you go onto any of their websites, so say if you go onto Oxfam's website, you'll see they have lots of different reports. And this is often referred to as over-accounting. So if you go onto a private sector organisation's website, you'll really just see their financial statements. You won't see a lot of other information. But if you go onto an NGO's website, typically you'll see a vast array of different reports. And this has tended to be called over-accounting, because it tends to produce lots of different accounting reports. But what tends to happen is that a lot of those reports are not very good. And this is what's called a tendency to under-account. So you have lots of information, but a lot of it not very effective or lacking. NGOs are also characterised by a salience of values, or they're often called value-driven. So NGOs exist not to generate profits, as we've mentioned previously, but to further certain values or other social aims. So this might be justice, equity, the rights of particular groups, for example. And people are motivated by these things primarily. So if you go to work for an NGO, for example, you certainly are probably not going there because of the huge financial rewards on offer, because there aren't any, or the pay is a lot lower. So people tend to join these organisations for a variety of other motivations that are not primarily related to financial rewards. And this is important for accounting, because a lot of accounting has to do with financial rewards and financial calculations. Even with things like budgeting, that people join NGOs, they expect to be involved. And they expect to be involved in things like strategic planning, budgeting, and so on. So in contrast to the private sector, where you might have a small group of people involved in these kinds of processes, in NGOs you might actually have a lot of people who feel they should be involved in budgeting and strategic planning activities. You don't tend to have any bonuses, financial bonuses or other rewards, even for CEOs of charities and so on. No one really gets bonuses, performance contingent rewards. They're very different from, say, the banking sector, for example. So when we're thinking about how to motivate staff, the typical practice that we might use in a for-profit organisation is to somehow link people's performance to changes in the company's profitability. That's a very common arrangement that's used. But we wouldn't see that in an NGO sector. So we would need to use other practices to try and motivate people. And a lot of these practices need to somehow express the values of the people. And that also relates to the first point. If people join the NGO because they feel everyone should be involved in different activities, then even something as relatively mundane as a budgeting or strategic planning exercise actually needs to involve people to express the importance of participation, for example. And on the other side, and I've noticed this in a lot of my own research in NGOs, is that a lot of people, if you mention the word accounting, they sort of cringe and look away or think you're the devil, even, in some cases. Or they think that what you do is completely irrelevant to their activities. And this can be on a pure ideological basis. They just don't like business or accounting. And so that's why they've actually gone into the NGO sector. So there are real challenges around how do you get people to actually appreciate or even see the value in things like accounting. And this relates to this other factor, which is sometimes referred to as a culture of action. And it's going to be summed up in this phrase, get out there and do something. But when you talk to people who work in NGOs, they're always very anxious about making sure they're doing enough to help people who they're targeting. There's a reluctance to spend time perhaps sitting around in a meeting discussing performance. There's reluctance to sometimes, you know, review financial figures or other indicators. People don't tend to think of that as a useful way to spend their time. They want to get out there and actually directly help people. And so they tend to think of accounting, and I've heard people say this directly, that accounting is like paperwork. In effect, accounting is a waste of time. It's taking time away from doing other, what they see as more valuable activities. Or they see accounting as just part of the bureaucracy, as sort of something that other people do. So this can be very difficult if you're trying to get staff to, say, manage a budget. Something as very simple as managing a budget, people may view that process as extremely bad, have a negative view, seen as a waste of time. And also related to that, so there tends to be a lack of time actually devoted to analysing financial performance, for example. So things that would just be normal everyday practice in a business can somehow seem as paperwork, a burden in the NGO setting. And related to this is this last factor, that any money spent on administration is viewed as a waste. You might have actually encountered this yourself, or you might actually think of this yourself, that if you give money to an NGO, you don't want them to be wasting it on so-called overheads or administration expenses. And you tend to see this in this example here from Oxfam. So lots of NGOs have statements like this. So for every £1 you give, Oxfam spends 83p on its sort of development emergency work, 10p on running costs and support, and 7p on fundraising. Now it's quite remarkable that virtually every NGO I've ever looked at, this 10p, well, they're all about 10p. No matter whether they're huge NGOs, small, doing all kinds of different things, they all tend to report that they're only spending around, say, 5 to 15p out of a pound on so-called running costs or administration. And this is precisely because if that number was 40p, would you be more or less likely to donate money? Who thinks more likely? Who thinks less likely? And that's probably because you think that that money is wasted. If they spend money on administration, particularly if they spend 40p out of every pound on administration, then that's a waste. There's no point doing that. If anyone's interested in following this up, if you go onto YouTube, there's a very interesting clip by a guy called Dan Pilotta. If anyone wants to watch that, you can email me, I'll send you the link. That's quite an interesting illustration of his NGO actually closed down because his administration costs were supposedly too high and lots of people stopped getting money. This can be a very significant. And what this means is that low administration costs tend to imply good performance. And that was kind of borne out in our little test before, where if Oxfam went up to 40p, you kind of implicitly thought that that made them look like they were performing worse than if their performance was only 10p. And this actually is borne out in, just as an example, in the US, there's an organization called Charity Navigator, who effectively issue ratings of charities. And one of their metrics is about administration expenses, and basically the higher the administration ratio, the lower the rating the charity gets. So this is basically borne out in what does this mean for accounting? Well, firstly, accounting actually reinforces this, because that 10p, actually, the calculation of that 10p actually depends on accounting rules. So there are accounting rules that NGOs have to follow about how they classify different expenses. So accounting actually constructs those numbers, if you like. The rules of accounting make that 10p very visible. There's actually categories for those particular expenses. But perhaps more importantly, accounting itself is part of that 10P. Accounting is classified as administration, as part of the running costs. And so in effect, what this means is that NGOs are very reluctant to invest any money in developing their accounting systems. Because if they do, they have to actually report, according to the accounting rules, higher administration costs. And we know from our example before that if they do that, they may actually get less money from people donating. So what this means is that there's a real reluctance to invest any money in developing accounting practices, even if they would make the organisation more efficient. Again, this doesn't happen in the private sector. The private sector doesn't report how much money they spend on administration costs, and it wouldn't affect people giving them money or people investing. That's just sort of some of this stuff. Whereas it's quite different in the NGO sector. And so to get around that, often NGOs borrow accounting practices from other sectors because they're cheaper. They can just sort of take them off the shelf. They don't have to spend any money developing them, implementing them. And so therefore, a lot of those practices are often not suitable. They don't work very well because of all of the issues that we've just been talking about. So just to sum up, this culture of action and a view of administration as a waste of money tend to combine to mean that there's a lack of investment in accounting, as I was just saying, and there's also a lack of interest, because people want to get out there and do something and not even interested in the first place. And these other factors, like a focus on social values, diverse stakeholders, social goals, make the accounting practices that NGOs have actually much more difficult and complicated to use. And so that is where we would normally finish our first session of this module. And then we have another 4 weeks that follow, and then we will go and investigate all of these issues in a lot more detail.